Hello, my name is Kyle.
I'm Ryan.
And when our powers combine, we form
Experience Grind Podcast.
The podcast where, for better or worse, for good or bad, we will grind out every experience presented to us and give you our honest opinion on those experiences. Today, Ryan, we have quite the experience going on right here.
Mm-hmm.
We're joined by the very special guest, Little Bub, and her dude, Mike.
That is him.
We're here to talk about the Little Bub game that is in development right now. And you guys are working on a Kickstarter on that. Oh,
yep.
Bub?
Hey, Bub, why don't you tell us about the game?
Yeah, what do you got to say about it, Bub?
Well, she's not done. Just give her a minute. Jeez.
Oh, man, I'm sorry. I'm talking all over her. Bub, you little cutie. You're starring in your own game. This cat, I think, has done more than most people do in their entire lives.
It's true.
I would say that's easily describing her. And she's a pretty amazing thing.
Yeah, she's cleaning her foot right now.
Yeah, she's...
It's amazing.
I mean, how many people do you see clean their foot?
She's so involved. Like,
I try to never clean my feet.
So, I mean, I don't know. We're just going to talk about Bub. We're going to talk about the game. We're going to take it just kind of relaxed. So, I guess the first question, how did you come to be in Little Bub's possession? How did she come to own you?
Well, there's two stories. One is palatable to, you know, the normal pedestrian type person,
mm-hmm.
and that is that she was discovered as the runt of a feral litter in a tool shed in Unionville, you know, right next door to Bloomington,
mm-hmm.
and they discovered her when she was about a week old and bottle fed her and tried to find her a home. They didn't have a lot of luck, which is when my friends texted me a picture of her, and I came over to meet her. Because she was so unbelievably special, even from the photo. She looked like Gizmo.
Okay,
Only real.
Yeah.
And cuter.
She sounds like Gizmo, too.
It's a little bit. Good comparison, yeah.
And, but the true story is that she, well, the true story is that she's from space.
Yeah, she's a space cat.
And she crashed to Earth and quickly crawled to the nearest shelter where she found... was thrilled to discover that there were these creatures that looked remarkably like her, although not quite like her.
Enough to
blend in. And so, hey, Bub, that's...
Oh.
She does a post-meal obsessive cleaning.
As all cats and cat-like creatures are like to do.
Perfect.
So she's very tiny for a cat, though.
Yeah, that's where the lil comes
from. She's... pretty much perpetually kitten-esque, correct?
In a way, yeah. She definitely has retained many of her kitten-like features.
Now, do you think that that's an alien safety device to keep her looking cuter, to prevent attacks from, like, the government and the men in black?
You know, I mean, so it's hard to interpret all her messages, but
I'm fairly
certain that, you know, far, far away there's a colony of extraterrestrials who have been watching humans for a long time, but they're far away. It's not like they can just see with clear vision what's going on, but they've been taking notes, and they notice that a lot of humans have these companions with them, and they let these companions just roam around their house, and they realize that's the perfect way to infiltrate, you know, the
gather
home
intelligence.
And gather intelligence.
Yeah,
so
yeah.
What they did is they gathered what they could of these creatures, these cats, and they, you know, through light years, some data gets lost, and they got a few things off, you know, just a little off. And so they came up with Bub, thinking that it was a cat, but, you know, she's a little short and her tongue sticks out, just a little off. And so that's why she's here, is to gather data. But I think she's abandoned that mission and has her own mission, which is to create this video game. She just fell in love with video games.
As we all do.
As soon as she got here, she was like, dude, this is... fucking cool.
Were there any specific video games you fell in love with?
She's a big fan of Faxanadu.
Okay.
Nintendo, NES, right?
Yeah. It is, yeah. It's one of those, you know, like when... So I collected Nintendo games. I got my NES when I was my fifth birthday, 1985,
mm-hmm.
and it blew my mind wide open. And over time, I collected all these games, and somehow I got a lot of, like, you know, C game, you know, like C level games, like generic ish games, or games that weren't like the hits, and they kind of collected dust. And then my first like renaissance with Nintendo was in college, so like 2000, 2001, and mainly Tetris. The dudes in the house I lived in, we were absolutely insanely all we did. We didn't party and hang out like other college kids. We literally played Tetris super aggressively, had like a scoreboard, and would just drink and listen to records and play Tetris.
I like that.
In like, but then, oh, that's Joe. She's another cat. Then, digging through like this dusty box of games, I saw Faxanadu, and it has like this really dull cover. It doesn't, you can't even pronounce the damn name of the game. And you certainly didn't keep the instruction manual, but it's just sitting there. And I popped it in one day and just started playing, and it's like really dreary, and it's actually like an amazing game. It's like very dark,
really,
very sort of depressing. And
is it like side scroller?
It's a side scroller. I don't know what you, it's not quite role playing, it's role playing in the way that, you know, isn't there like a side-scrolling Zelda, Zelda 2?
Yeah, Zelda 2.
Yeah, it's like Zelda 2, but it's just like always raining and dreary. And it's like, it's pretty cool because when you think about it, you know, games were meant to be so like bubbly and like really eye-catching and very colorful. And this, someone like was like super bummed out when they made this game.
I hate my life.
And again, it's really good, like the storyline. I don't remember it now, but anyway, that's awesome. So that's like a big... Nintendo, and then a little early PC gaming... are basically, I haven't played video games. I played Ocarina of Time. Oh, that was like, well, no, this
when
was,
it came out.
Okay.
It was after it came out. It might have been like 2001, and probably came out like in the early, late 90s or something.
It came out in 98, I believe.
Yeah, so it was a few years, but that was like the last like truly immersive video game experience
I've been
experience
trying to get him to play it for a while.
You've never played it?
I'm not a Zelda fan. I
He's
like
not
the,
really a guy. Yeah.
The NES Zelda.
Yeah, it's
that
great.
That was fantastic. Wasted so many hours of my life as a kid on that game. 3D Zelda, not been able to get into.
I think they transitioned
Wife's
very well.
Super fan, but
oh really?
Yeah.
So another game that I wasted so much time and then never got the hang of, but for something it was so intriguing about it, I had to keep trying to figure out if it could be fun, was the first Ultima.
Oh, okay.
Which
not
was
Ultima
for Nintendo.
Online, but just Ultima.
The first NES Ultima. It's like straight up like you can barely make out what these things are supposed to be, and you just randomly walk around, and then you're like in a battle. And it's like like the most rudimentary turn-based role-playing.
Yeah.
And I was just like, what am I supposed to do in this game? I read the manual like 10 times. I was like, I got some points.
It's one of those things, too, as a kid. There's so many games where like you have no idea if you're doing it right. What?
Yeah.
But it's still, it mesmerizes you. It captures you. I don't know.
Absolutely. Dude, sorry. I keep... And this is relevant because it's
going,
like
man.
An influence. It was an influence for when designing Hello Earth, the bub game, is Bionic Commando.
Okay, I can totally feel that playing the game.
Do you remember that game? It's Commando. It was like a side scroller, but he had that grappling arm that you would have to. And I thought that was such a like brilliant sort of, especially for such an early game, like as like a mechanic, like a gaming.
Yeah, and they didn't really ever do anything kind of like that again. Mm-mm. Like they abandoned that grapple mechanic, and it was very, very unique.
They kind of used it in Rygar too, didn't they?
Or I don't know if I played Rygar.
The shield on a chain, right?
Yeah. Oh yeah.
Yeah, I remember that very well.
But Rygar is another one. It's like Rygar, and then it disappeared forever. And
they tried to bring both those back, and they did not transition
Commando?
To what? Bionic Commando and Rygar both had, I think they were PS2.
Bionic Commando was 360 PS3 generation.
Okay, yeah.
And it was not good.
And Rygar was PS2.
His wife died and then became
the
mechanical arm.
Yeah, it's
that
really
silly.
The wife?
Hook.
His wife died,
That was
and he
the
also,
Wait. So you shoot his wife out of your...
She's
no.
living in the
that
arm
is
like an AI. It's really, really weird.
Dude,
and he has dreadlocks.
That's actually genius. Wait, she has dreadlocks?
No, the dude does. The Bionic Commando.
See, that's where they went wrong. They should have had her have dreadlocks and they had special powers.
And that's what shoots out. Yeah, totally.
I mean, there you go.
I hope they watch this podcast, and then if you do it, you're
make
in trouble.
Another one.
Bub's lawyers will call you.
Yes. Before there were zero people asking for a Bionic Commando 2, now there are three people asking for Bionic Commando 2.
With dreads, again.
Yeah.
But do it the right way.
So he had dreads, so he was like the revived Vanilla Ice.
Yes.
Yeah.
With a wife as an arm.
He was, I mean, I don't know how far you got into video gaming, but he was essentially Eddie from Tekken.
I don't know. Oh, Eddie from Tekken.
Eddie from
Tekken.
The guy
Eddie
who
Gordo.
Oh,
his feet.
Like, was he like the really rubbery, pale guy?
Yeah, yeah, but he had dreadlocks, yeah.
Oh, he did. Now I do remember that,
But your upbringing video game wise is actually very similar to our sound engineer who was he played.
When
NES.
Were you born? 80. Yeah. So yeah. There we go.
He grew up with NES, and that's he stopped. He still doesn't play anything other than that. And very similar to how you guys grew up in college a few years ago. Him and I had a NES ice hockey league, where it was just him and I in it. And we played every week, and we kept a running scoreboard. I
mean, that sounds great, dude.
I mean, Tyler and I are the only ones who ever won.
You guys, we did have tournaments. We did have two ice hockey tournaments, and both of
you guys won. Well, I'm curious, how old are all you guys? Because I'm just curious, like, how many people, how relevant.
He's the youngest.
I'm 86, yeah.
Yeah, I was 84, and you were 82, and you were also 82?
Because you don't think about it, because maybe to someone born in 86, is the NES relevant at all besides like a nostalgic or like, oh, dude?
No, I grew up with the NES.
Oh, you did?
Yeah, I mean, I think early on, the SNES and Genesis started happening, but my family didn't afford that right away. Oh, so right. I was NES for like the first 10 years of my life.
One thing, you guys edit this podcast, right?
Lazily.
Yeah,
but you can cut out. I think she needs to take a dump.
Oh yeah, go ahead. Go ahead. We'll take a break. We always take bathroom breaks.
But what was I going to say? Oh yeah, I just wonder. You know, like to me, NES was critical, but and it's the new systems come so quickly
nowadays. Yeah. Well,
back then, even I mean, SNES was like.
I think it was 93.
I guess that was like 8 years, 9 years later. Yeah. So I don't think I. Interesting story I do have though is that I played the SNES way before anyone else, any of my peers, like really? A year early. Because, you know, you got, what was it called, the Nintendo Magazine?
Yeah, Nintendo Power.
Dude, man, I that could not wait for that magazine to come out. And you'd see all the pictures and read about it was called the Famicom, right?
Mm-hmm. Super Famicom.
Super Famicom. And it was going to come out as a Super NES. And, like, it was, like, I was more excited about that than, like, Reebok pumps. And
those were also very cool.
I did get those.
Yeah.
And the very first pair, which are probably worth a crazy amount of money.
I also had these shoes called like kangaroos that had like a pouch in the...
Oh, the Roos. They still make those. Yeah,
they do?
Oh, yeah.
Damn, I remember having those as a kid. I love those.
I was not a cool kid. I only played with the Super Nintendo, no shoes.
Oh, no shoes.
He was shoeless.
I was shoeless.
In his dirt floor house.
So this place called Video Synthesis, which was a rental store in town. You didn't realize rented games, but if you asked them, they actually had a Super Famicom.
Really?
Like a year before NES came out, and no one really knew it. I think I was just like reading Nintendo Power, and he's like, hey, we actually have this. It's all in Japanese, but you can play it. So I played, what was the Mario game?
Super Mario World?
Yeah. Super Mario World. Yeah. I played Super Mario World in Japanese.
And that's okay. You don't have to read Japanese to understand that game. Just jump on things and go right.
It was very funny because, you'd go to those little like speaker box things and then and it's like, I don't know.
Yeah, I don't know what the hell's going on here.
Keep going. Yeah.
I grew up, I had an NES as a kid, but I grew up with a Sega. I didn't get an SNES till almost the end of
the Sega
life.
Master System?
No, a Genesis. Just a Genesis. Yeah. I had Sonic. I had the Jurassic Park game, which was amazing because on the Genesis you could play as the Velociraptor.
It controlled poorly, though.
It did, but you could eat people, and that was fucking awesome.
Yeah, so. That's all you don't need to control it.
Yeah, who cares?
Very well, if you can eat everything,
So I don't know. Like, I guess, how did this game come about? Like, was this your idea? Did you get kind of approached more about it?
That's a good question. I don't know how any of these bub projects come to fruition.
Yeah, they just kind of happen?
Well, there's sort of her... it really is. She's like a muse. It's sort of her like energy that sparks our creativity. And by our, I mean me and my buddies and everyone who's sort of involved. And like the team behind Bub grows as we do more stuff. And we do, I have a strict rule that I had from the beginning over 4 years ago when she got famous that I don't seek out opportunities. I'm never going to like try to do stuff like reach out to people like, hey, or a very organic thing. So it just happened through all our stuff and people reaching out to us. There was a company called Snapper and they first reached out to us about doing a Bub like video or a Bub like photo editing app. And it's called The Power of Bub is the app we created. And I agreed to work with them because they were huge fans of Bub and the app was really cool. And it's basically you can Bubify your photos. And then it evolved into the Little Bub app, which is the same thing just with more options. And then I was like, hey, do you guys, I think it'd be super cool to do a video game. And Ed, who is on our team, was like, he's from New Zealand. I'm going to try and imitate him, but I don't know if I can do very. Yeah, we can do that. I can't do it very well. But,
I was really hoping for the Kiwi accent.
We really strive for it's terrible, tough. Terrible impersonations.
Oh, good. You thought it was terrible?
Yeah. Well, this kind of yeah. That's it. Wasn't the greatest.
Words. I mean, what a gracious host he is.
Well, where are you going? You really like Kyle?
It's okay,
yeah.
Bob. I'll pet on your
she usually she's usually not this
friendly.
No, she's very friendly, but she's usually... Oh, she's trying to get her ears itched.
I'm not going to do that again.
Here, she wants to get on your lap.
Okay, I'll hold you, bub.
See, this is when we need that handheld cam. Yeah, get in here Michael Mann style. She's real close and...
Yep, if you put your hand there, she'll either... she's getting cozy to you. Good. That's great. Right. Congratulations.
The bub whisperer
2.0. What were we talking about? Oh, yeah, and then... it was sort of, and then on the other end, there was this guy, Drew, who designed shirts for this company called the Yeti, which
yeah,
you guys.
Yeah, the ET. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
I actually have one of their t-shirts.
Oh, yeah.
I was really stoked about that because I was like, oh, this dude, I have one of these shirts.
Oh, yeah. So when they first came around, I think we were one of their first licenses and they just reached out, like one of their designers was a big Bub fan. They're like, hey, do you want to do a Bub shirt? I was like, sure. And then the second Bub shirt was by Drew Wise, and it was a super little Bub t-shirt. I don't know if you've seen it, but it looks like an NES cartridge with Bub in her spaceship. And he just designed it, and that's how I met him. And I was like, dude, I love this. I'm a huge NES fan. And then people really liked it, and that just made me think, dude, wouldn't it be awesome if there was an actual like NES-style Bub game? And this was like it was almost 4 years ago that shirt was designed. And then it just sort of progressed, and I talked to Ed, and I was like, let's do this. And I don't even remember how it all started and how, but I was like, hey, you should meet Drew, and Drew had always wanted, he's like a pixel artist, and I think he's pretty known.
Yeah.
And he's always wanted to like actually design and animate a video game. Man, she really likes you. Listen to her. Go.
Oh, no, she's a good girl.
That's good.
Oh, we're buddies.
She's very happy right now.
I like that. That's a good sound.
Yeah. And so that's how the game kind of came about. We didn't know how to do it. It's a crazy amount of work, anyone who's developed a game.
Yeah.
And actually, we have a very small development team compared to most games, especially for what we're trying to do, which is... The idea is for it to be not just like a Flappy Bird, but to be like a really in-depth, a game that you would expect to like an A plus game on a Super Nintendo or something. And it's going to be pretty in-depth and all this stuff. So, and the goal for the Kickstarter is to make it a free mobile game. And if we can get beyond our minimum goal and reach our stretch goals, we are hoping to make it available for a desktop PC and Wii U.
Good.
That was
a question that him and I both had, because it does work, and I was actually very surprised by the play style on a mobile phone, because generally a platformer, it's not going to work very well. But I can tell there has been a lot of work done to that. It's still not as precise as I would like.
Right.
But it does work very well. But I think this game would benefit a lot on another platform like a PC. And I think it would do very well on the Steam store and the Wii U store. I think that's amazing.
We're looking into it. And I'm sort of the idea man, and sort of like, I want a grappling arm and I want her to shoot lasers out of her face.
I want her to have dreadlocks.
So little Bob grappling arm confirmed?
It's in the demo. Okay. So yeah, you definitely
was
got
it in the demo?
It's in the spaceship. Yeah. And like all that stuff. And then I'm the guy that figures out how you're going to have to use it and make the game challenging and all that stuff. But I don't understand like the coding
and
that's what we're learning too, is like when I'm like, hey, I want it so that the boss, you have to like get her bloodshot, and then you have to use the yogurt to freeze her, and then you have to use the super beam to destroy her, you know, stuff like that. I was like, that's how you have to beat it. Mm-hmm. And they're like, oh man, okay, we'll try to figure it out.
I really liked actually the boss. The raccoon that I faced.
Yeah.
That really reminded me of Rescue Rangers on the NES. I don't know if you ever played that.
I don't know if I remember that game. No.
But that reminded me a lot of that.
I was going to say, when we were talking earlier about kind of the influence you're going with, like, I definitely got like the old NES Capcom vibe.
Yeah.
It felt like the at least the side-scrolling, like the force level, felt a lot like Little Nemo.
Oh, yeah.
And the fact that you have like eight different parts that you have to get, it's like, that's Mega Man. That's clearly Mega Man.
It's very Mega Man influenced, yep.
I really like, too. Sorry, I just cut you off totally. But I really like in the forest level that there's not, I mean, there's so many different things to explore in it. It's not A to B, jump over these things. Like an early level Mario, there's a lot of things you can see in that first forest level.
And we're trying to make it even more so. So it's definitely up and down, left, and you go back and forth. And there we have this huge list of things to add. So we just added crouch and crawl. But the idea, too, is that when you crouch and you hold the down button, you get to look down to see what. So the whole thing shifts down so you can see what's below you. Yeah. And then when you do up, she's going to look up and you can see what's up. Which, you know, that way we can put Easter eggs and, like, hidden things. And, like, you see it, like, if you look up and you see a ledge, like right at the edge of the frame, and you're like, how do I get to that? And then you find out that if you, you know, she has a tongue that grabs stuff. If you grab a Luna moth, it gives you flying abilities for 5 seconds, and then you can fly up and get to like a special spot. So that's the kind of thing that we're really looking forward to working into the game if we get funded, and really make it like over the top.
Yeah.
Hot air balloon rides, like crazy shit. And that, like I said, that's my job to come up with these crazy ideas, and then they get stressed out and then figure it out, and then it's awesome.
What they gotta do. It reminds me also very much of one of my favorite genres of game, and Ryan knows this, the Metroidvania, where like,
a little bit,
so
yeah.
You see something, but you don't know how to get there, but maybe there's something that you get later.
And you come back.
And you come back, and you can get to that point later. I love that type
of game. It's my favorite, yeah. Dude, Metroid. I would say Metroid is probably, and that's a game, the first Metroid, that I think, as far as like mood, it's like super, I was terrified.
That sets the tone,
I had
real
nightmares as a child playing. The first time I saw like that creepy, like hair, like featherless bird holding the orb.
Ridley.
Yes. Dude.
Yeah, Metroid, right on. Yeah. Best NES music, I think, by far.
Oh,
It's killer.
So creepy and cold.
Speaking
and,
of music, you know, I would like to give a call out to the music in this game because it is pretty fucking amazing.
Yeah.
I know it's all developed by Matt Tobey.
Yep.
I want to. Do you have any input on that, or do you just let him kind of run free?
Well, background to Matt Tobey and I, as our relationship goes very far back. I first recorded his band Good Luck years ago, and that's when we became buddies. And then we started a band called Memory Map together, where we made music that was almost like similar to like video game style music, but with guitars. And he's always been very like his musical influence is the NES, and that's he's always wanted to make video game music. And then I asked him to make music for Bub videos like years ago because I just needed background music, and he owed me money, and I said, how about you just work it off by making me some music? And people fell in love with these songs, and so did I. And he just, you know, he didn't think about them too much, and he just spewed them out. He's like, oh, I really love doing this. And then we turned those like songs into an album, and that's a Little Bub record. So then we came into the studio, and actually I produced it, and we record it with real instruments, and I think it's super cool.
So is that the Bub band?
And the Little Bub band then learned those songs and performed them live. We did 3 shows.
I didn't even know about that.
Yeah, that was crazy. We worked super hard to play these 3 shows, and then that was it. And so then, of course, for this game, I said, hey, Matt, here's an opportunity to write video game music. And so that's how it came about. And as far as I basically am like, hey, for this boss, we need some boss music, or we need level music. And then he plays the demo and figures out kind of what inspires him. Yeah. And the music's one of my favorite parts, and one of the rewards.
It's really, really well done.
It's and so like the first stretch goal is called the Bub's Extended Music Collection, I think. And if we reach the first stretch goal, Matt will make a ton more, because he can just really knock these songs out, a ton more songs. And then you find cassette tapes hidden throughout the game, and there's a tape player, and you can choose which songs you listen to for each level. And I'm hoping we can do up to like 30 or 40 songs, and you have to work really hard to find these tapes.
That'd be really cool.
And we have a new reward tier coming up where you can, I don't think we've added it yet, but I think it's the next one I'm going to announce. It'll be around $2,000, but you can choose a song of your choice to be covered as an 8-bit by Matt, and then it's in the game. And then you get a code that lets you download that song for your version of the game.
That's awesome. I'm a big fan of chiptune music in general.
Mm-hmm.
Two of the things that I really noticed playing the demo is that, especially musically and visually, there is a love here. It's not just like, let's phone it in, let's just do this. It's
no Flappy Bird.
Yeah, it is no Flappy Bird.
Well, that's what we're really trying, and that's what I do with every Bub project. Like, same with the record. Like, people are like, oh, a record by a famous cat. And that was, like, sort of the whole idea behind the record, is that this is going to be a really good record. And not what people are expecting. And then they listen to it, and they're like, oh, man, these dudes worked really hard on this album, and it's actually pretty good. And the same thing here. It's not just, I mean, everything that I do with Bub has to be worthy of her
yeah
presence, you know, and her sort of magic. So that's what we're trying to do.
Go ahead.
Oh, I was gonna say the record, the main single is Gravity.
New Gravity.
New Gravity.
Because she just landed on Earth, so she has a new gravity to get used to.
I really enjoy this whole Bub as an alien aspect. I you know, as a nerdy guy, I've always been enraptured by space anyway, so yeah. it fits so well, and it's such a fun explanation for Bub and what she does, and it works so well in a video game too. Like, it all is transferred amazingly.
I mean, it allows you to do pretty much anything you want.
Yeah.
Too. Like, it opens up
she
so much.
She shoots lasers out of her eyes because she's a fucking alien. I mean, what
well, and
do
that's
you want?
Like, and that's like been the one of the ongoing jokes with Bub from the beginning when things started taking off. It was like, I made up the notion that she's literally capable of anything.
Mm-hmm.
And when people are like, what are some of her special powers? And then I list them, and it's telepathy, telekinesis, time travel, space travel, teleportation, clairvoyance. There's like absolutely nothing she can't do, and that leaves you with like endless possibilities for creativity.
So she's almost like Golden Age Superman, where the powers just keep coming. Well,
but she doesn't have any kryptonite.
I mean, the weakest character.
No, of course not. No.
I'm,
oh, come on.
No, I mean, all right, sorry. Yeah, bring up Superman. He's boring.
I'm a big Superman fanboy.
He's just like a boring white dude with a shitty haircut.
It's just like, it's a kid on a playground, like, well, my superhero can do this. That's Superman. That's ridiculous.
I mean, especially Golden Age.
Well,
Superman,
also his name
true.
Is Superman.
Like, yeah. Come on.
Can you get any less creative than that?
Captain America.
Very good, man.
It's pretty uncreative. So I was going to ask about the powers you're talking about that Little Bub has. Will we be seeing any of that in the video game aside from like the lasers? But you're talking about like time travel. Like, that's fascinating. Will we see that?
Well, there's our idea for some bonus levels.
Okay, nice.
Oh, that's a very good idea.
Will we see Little Bub take on Hitler? I'm just saying.
Speaking of Bionic Commando, did you ever beat Bionic Commando? Because a lot of people never got to the end. And I was like, are you fucking kidding me?
It's tied in.
They put Hitler in this game.
Yeah, very similar to Wolfenstein, although in Wolfenstein he's wearing it.
Yeah.
Is he in a mech suit or has he just got two chain guns?
I think it's two chain guns. Okay. Like, in Bionic Commando, he's in the full-on mech suit.
That's what it is. I'm kidding. Yeah.
So there you go. There's your idea. Just completely wholesale rip off Bionic Commando for one level, and there you go.
It's a love letter to Bionic Commando.
Well, one thing that is on my like list, and I didn't have the time to do the research to see if it's even possible, but I want it to be a stretch goal, is license Super Mario Brothers to be able to play Super Mario Brothers as the Bub sprite, but also with her laser eyes and her tongue, and so you could grab all the things. And
I'm sure there's a way to do that.
Well, I know.
I don't know.
With Creative Commons. I mean, there's so
million bucks, I'd be like, okay.
Well, you see like all the ripoff, like the Japanese like hard Mario games, like that are not Mario. Like I Want to Be the Guy. That's essentially Mario, but like super hard. Like, and they sell for money. I'm sure there's a way.
There is
also
the Super Mario Maker where you can have different skins, but play the game. So I mean,
well, I might reach out to them, or you know, I'm sure they listen to this podcast.
I'm sure they do. Nintendo is a giant
over
fan
and
of
over.
Us. Yes, Miyamoto, you're Miyamoto, bro.
Oh,
I'm
God.
So sorry. That was really bad. I don't know why I even did that.
It wasn't bad.
I really liked
that joke.
That's the end of the show. Just the series as a whole.
So, like, you said you're more the idea guy. Like, how involved are you in development of the game?
Well, depends on what you mean by development. As far as like, you know, I came up with the entire story, the concept sort of, and like I said, I'm the guy that's like, okay, so Bub's going to have lasers shoot out of her eye. And then when you hold the button, it powers up her laser. And if you hold it long enough, there's a power, like all the game mechanics.
Very Mega Man-esque. Too.
All the game mechanics. Oh, and I wanted to say this earlier, it's even more Mega Man-esque in that, so all the pieces of her space pod are missing.
Mm-hmm.
The idea is that these baby raccoons take the remaining 7 and run off with them, and they sell them off on the black market to different crazy animals all over the world. And then you have to go find them. And then each boss, whether it's the Bird of Paradise, if you don't know what that bird is, you should look it up. It's intense.
Yeah, he's really cool looking.
Yeah. And all kinds of, you know, a polar bear, but they each have one of the missing space pod pieces, and they use that piece against you. Just like the raccoon holds up the battery and zaps you. The polar bear may have the invisibility cloak and becomes invisible and reappears.
Yeah.
And that kind of thing. And so you have to defeat, just like in Mega Man, and then once you get that piece, you get to put it back on your space pod and use that piece on the next shooter level.
I think you are saying all the right things, because as I was playing the demo, I was like, I really hope it's like Mega Man that you get to go in any order and then you get to use what you, and you do. So, yep. I mean.
And what I think is clever, and I don't think anyone else sees it because they haven't played the game yet, is that the first shooter level, you have all the parts of your space pod. So the space pod is as powerful as possible.
Okay.
And then once the game gets funded and you get to your first shooter, you no longer have all these powers anymore, and it becomes really hard to play. And then you're like, oh, I can't wait to get these pieces.
Awesome.
So I can.
I mean, it's God of War 2 does that. You start off as the most powerful, and then you get struck down, and cool. You have to build yourself back up. So that's great. And I was going to actually ask about the difficulty of this game. As I was playing through it, it was just the right kind of difficulty.
Oh, good.
But like you talk about your NES and SNES kind of influences. Is it going to get NES hard later on, or is this going to be kind of aimed for the mainstreams where it's like it's accessible and we're going to try to get everybody?
So I have a question. NES hard? Is NES typically considered hard?
There is a general classification called Nintendo hard, where yeah. especially in old NES games, they are notorious for being incredibly difficult. Like
that must be why I keep pushing. So it's interesting you ask this, because I'm always pushing like, okay, well, everything works. It's pretty easy. Now we have to add the challenges. And that's like my idea for like the boss is that you... The whole right now you have yogurt, you got the mm-hmm. arm, and they don't really do anything. Like they're there and you kind of use them, but the end game is that they're critical to the gameplay. And the yogurt you have to use to freeze the boss, and the only way to beat the boss is to freeze her when she's mm-hmm. stunned, and then you have to use the power blast to explode her, otherwise you cannot beat the boss. Like
yeah.
so really tricky. Metal Gear. I couldn't figure out the very end of Metal Gear. We have to go
NES
on the side
oh,
and
yeah.
fucking put that plastic explosive in the side of the door to blow up the mega computer or whatever.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I sound like the biggest dork, but
hey,
I guess it's the
that's,
right place.
That's
to
our
like
podcast.
Yeah,
bro.
We do
that's
that
good.
Every week.
It's
yeah.
But yeah, I couldn't. I think I had to read Nintendo Power to figure that one out.
A lot of people
sorry
did.
To admit that, but.
Hey, man.
But how
no,
are you supposed
NES
to fucking
Metal
Gears know?
Are ridiculous. Well, that's all
again,
NES games.
That's
like, you,
NES games.
But you hear it.
Through the
nerd kid grapevine, yeah. yeah.
Like Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles on
the
NES. It's
that's
so
the
fucking hard.
Battletoads.
That's Nintendo hard.
That's,
so that's another
hard.
One, dude.
Doable alone, two people, impossible.
Yeah, it gets way harder with two people, which is rare, because usually co-op is
right.
easier. But
Double Dragon?
Double Dragon,
dude,
yeah.
that game. So many glitches, like your guy's like invisible, like half translucent through most of the game. But
mm-hmm.
There's a really good sequel that they just released for Double Dragon called
really?
Double Dragon Neon. That's on
oh,
Steam.
It's amazing.
It is really well done.
Oh, really?
It's
if you're
one
into
of my
Double
favorite
Dragon,
games from the last generation.
It is so choice. I mean,
I have a hard time with new games, man. Like
It's still side scroll. It's Double Dragon,
oh, really?
Just with a nice fresh coat of paint.
I'd like to talk about that. Why is that? Why do you think?
So I transitioned from NES to role-playing games. That's where
I
was obsessed. And
role-playing like video games or like the D&D
video
board
games? Not
stuff.
Board
okay.
games. I would like board games, but I never got into them. But the game that basically, and I guess interesting we didn't talk about earlier, but the game that changed my life and sort of is like my favorite game I've ever played, and I don't know if a lot of people know it, but I know it's a cult classic to some, is called Betrayal at Krondor.
No, I'm not familiar with that.
It's like a 90, early mid-90s PC-only role-playing game,
okay.
and it was like... Dude, it completely consumed my life. Like, that's all I could think about. And
really?
I just, like,
this is crazy.
Listened to 90s radio and played this game nonstop. And I came out with a sequel called Betrayal at Antara. And that was purchased by Sierra Games. You remember Sierra?
I know.
Yeah.
They did all
yeah, yeah.
So Betrayal at Krondor was pre-Sierra. Sierra bought it and did Betrayal at Antara, and it kind of sucked. But anyways, you can still, it's such a big cult classic that you can still download like a package that makes it work on your PC still.
Really? Okay.
Yeah. So you can find it. It's pretty obscure and hard to find, but there's people that.
We're going
to
try this
yeah,
out.
Yeah, I wrote
now.
It down. Yeah.
Okay.
I'm gonna
we might actually play this and then have you back
on
to talk about this.
Oh, dude, almost killed the Andre.
Dude, Andre
we
goes fast.
We always kill it. That's the thing. It's not good at first,
but
it disappears
yeah. Yeah, it turns
really
quickly.
It
definitely
quick.
Helps the podcast yeah. move along.
I'm sure Andre loves to hear that.
But I don't. So, hey, Andre. So where were we going with this?
Betrayal of Krondor and
your,
games
oh,
your
what I don't,
games
yeah.
and why not modern games.
So then, you know, I saw all these game like gaming systems get cooler and I was like, dude, games have got to be insane by now, like 15 years have gone by. And I got an Xbox 360. Yeah, that's what I have. And I bought a few games, and one of the last role playing games I played on PC was actually I think called Dragon Quest, which eventually
Dragon Quest or Dragon Age?
Whatever it is, it's the one that evolved into the very famous, very popular.
Dragon Quest is a big Enix thing where the main.
It's very Japanese.
Yeah, it's very cartoon.
Dragon Age.
No, it's not that.
Okay, Dragon Age.
Is it the one where you can be anyone? It turned into, what's that game? Elder Scrolls. It's the very first of the Elder
Skyrim,
Scrolls.
Skyrim, or not.
It turned into Skyrim, but it's the very, very, very first one.
Okay.
It's like in the 90s, it was a PC game, and yeah, it was like...
It was Morrowind, and then even before Morrowind, it was Daggerfall?
Daggerfall. Yeah. That's what it was.
Okay. Good pull.
So I had Daggerfall, and so good. Then Skyrim came out, and I was like, dude, this has got to be incredible. And then I was like, this, just to learn this game and get used to it and figure it out and get into it, it's going to take 12 hours.
Yeah.
And I don't have time to do this anymore. And honestly, to me, the stories are like slightly contrived or not that, they're not as gripping as they used to be. And maybe there isn't enough left to the imagination like there was back in the day. And it also could be that my imagination itself isn't as...
No, I agree with you wholly.
A lot of people agree with you. I mean, generally, now that... those types of games are made by Bethesda. They're still sandboxy, but they're just something about the charm just isn't there that you have from like the Daggerfall and the Morrowind.
Well, they have all those they hire actors to say all the stuff. And they're like, it sounds so cheesy, and I'm like, I can't get into this. I can't. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, Patrick Stewart was in one of the Elder Scrolls games recently, but yeah, it's. You are exactly right. I think because you had to use your imagination, you got to put a lot of yourself into those games when you don't hear voice acting and you don't get all... You see like an 8-bit sprite, and you kind of have to make that up in your imagination what it actually looks like as opposed to how they just render it now.
Right. Well, it seems like a lot of the time was spent reading shit. Mm-hmm. And if it was like interesting to read, that'd be one thing. But I was like, Skyrim especially, it's like, oh, this person lost his dog and then he...
He took an arrow to the knee. That's how every...
Like, and I realized like it's like all these stupid missions that don't really...
Do it.
Like,
it's all padding. It's like, who cares?
It's all padding, and it's like, you can do whatever you want. And I was like, I don't want to do anything in this fake world you made up for me. Mm-hmm. Seriously, it's not that bad, but... you know what I mean, though?
I agree.
It felt aimless, and then some other games feel like they're too guided, and it's like you're just playing a movie that's not very good. That's exactly how I felt. I had some game where it's like it tells you everything to do. You go, you play for like 5 minutes, and then it's like 10 minutes of like story.
The hand-holding is a big problem I have with current-gen gaming, where it's... I get what they're trying to do to make it more accessible to everybody, but at the same time, you're really turning off the people that are there to enjoy it. Like that, it's a really fine line you got to skate to bring in new people, but keep the current fans or just... video game fans in general.
Well, I think that's maybe a challenge that we're having with Hello Earth is that it's, I think visually it's accessible, but I think it might not be accessible, especially to a lot of Bub fans who aren't necessarily video gamers. Mm-hmm. They're like, a video game they play, and they're like, I just keep killing Bub, and no one wants to kill Bub.
No,
you know?
No.
So, I'm trying to appeal to like true gamers who are really into like, and it's hard. I think it's hard to reach that demographic because I think a lot of true gamers are probably like, oh, a little Bub's got a game, whatever.
Yeah.
Maybe not.
That's a very interesting quandary.
It is.
It is like, who is your audience at that point then? Because it's the hardcore gamers might just brush it off like, oh, look at that casual iPhone game. Like, I'm not going to play that.
Yeah.
And then the iPhone people, you don't want to make it too hard for the casual people.
Right.
That's rough.
Yeah, it is. And if you notice, like, we have. Our average pledge level is very high, and these are like super Bub fans who are going to support Bub no matter what she does at a very high level to get like the cool collector's pins and all that stuff, which is great. I mean, that's why we have that, is to have people excited about the stuff and really participate. Oh, perfect segue.
Look at this. That's a good segue to get these Kickstarter.
Yeah, so that's the pillow pledge, and we had the company make us some prototypes. Do the back of the head, because that's my favorite.
It's still got the tongue hanging down.
Yeah,
I love that.
Oh,
yeah.
It does. Yeah, it's very nice. Nice.
And they're very comfortable, amazingly soft pillows. I'm not trying
really
to sell them, but they are handmade in Chicago. They're I'm really stoked on those. And so all the stuff we're making is like super high quality.
It really is. It's not cheaping out.
I think like a lot of Kickstarters just do like free goodies. And what we're doing is like actually really nice handmade sort of stuff.
Well, I know a lot of problems with... I don't want to say a lot of Kickstarters, but it's the delivery on what's promised. But, you know, I know you through a lot of other people, and I know that you, as Bubs do not half-ass anything.
That's true.
What you say is going to happen, you're going to fucking make happen. You're not going to squander. You're not going to squelch. So I feel very, very true that what you promise on this game is going to come to fruition. And so I don't have any qualms or quandaries with that.
So right now, please give us some promises that you can't back up from.
I can promise that Kyle will use a lot of words that start with Q.
Yeah, I do. It's really
it's
weird.
Like you're a Q man.
Yeah.
I spell my name Q Y L E.
Yeah, I do. I'm going to from this point.
Because, you know, we need her in this. I will admit that it's not very often that she really gravitates towards another person like that. But I do think she's been a little sour at me for like the past, actually since I had a kid.
Yeah.
Sort of like, seriously, bro, what's going on here?
Yeah.
But we're still good.
So I wonder, like, when did you really start to realize that Bub was having the effect on the internet that she does? Like, when did this start to really...
way before she was famous.
Yeah?
It's, I truly believe her fame is absolutely inevitable. It's not like, I really didn't try.
No, I definitely, yeah, I know you did.
And I mean, like, based the way I reacted the first time I saw a photo of her, which was like, does this thing actually exist? Before meeting her, just from a photo, is exactly how everyone responds to her when they see her. But not everyone, the right kind of people. I think it's really people that have a open mind and open heart to science and magic. It's really, she has an unmistakable energy and an unmistakable sort of power that I think reaches very far and deep. And some people really don't get it. And to me, that's just a plain like judge of character. And she really, if she doesn't like someone, she lets it be known. And if she really likes someone, she lets it be known. And I've seen her straight up, someone touch her, and she just hisses and swats at them, which
really?
Is very rare. And then I'm like, dude, that person has to get very far away because there's something wrong with that person. and it's like, it's not even, it's just like this very strict litmus test. So, although sometimes if you smell like another cat, she might hiss at you.
Okay.
So I guess it's not very that strict.
So like, that's another, like, in the hierarchy of Bub, because you also have other cats. Like, how do they interact with Bub?
So the cats here, they know her fairly well from her. She comes here a lot. A lot of the videos we shoot are here. The calendar shoots happen here. And so they actually have a pretty good, healthy relationship over time. But she lives with another cat, Spooky, who's her brother, who's also
in the game. Man. Yeah.
And Spooky and her actually really don't get along.
He's
a Russian blue, and he thinks she's like the ultimate toy, and he really pounces on her. And she hisses and screams at him like it's, but it's funny. It's like the Odd Couple. Man, she really.
You want to come back?
So she's the Felix. Is Scary the Oscar?
Spooky? Yeah.
Spooky.
Scary. That's a good name. I think his name should be Scary too.
Spooky. I'm not going to pet your ears.
Yeah, and then we have a dog. And there, she gets along better with Trudy, but she'll get... Trudy's like a big, clumsy pit bull.
As all dogs are.
Yeah, and Bub gets like real freaked out around Trudy sometimes. But she mainly likes people. Oh.
Scratch it.
So she does well with generally all people. She's a very people-pleasing cat.
Dude, this is crazy.
It's okay,
Bub. Be very careful with her, though.
I understand that Bub is a very fragile...
Yeah, man, she
creature.
Loves you. This is great.
Like, so one of the things that I really respect that you do with Bub, you do a lot of charity work with Bub.
Yeah, I mean, ultimately that's the focus of our...
Of Bub, yeah.
Yeah.
What if anything is like one that really kind of just, I don't know, stands out to you, something that's really special to you that you've done charity-wise with Bub?
Sure. Well, you know, it's hard to concentrate, you know, when she's around. We do... we raise a lot of money for special needs pets. We started the first national fund for special needs pets called Little Bub's Big Fund, and it's a partnership with the ASPCA. So, and through that, they basically, we raise money, and all the money gets turned into grants, and then shelters from all over the country apply for these grants for special needs pets programs or for specific cases. And honestly, like, the list is so long of specific cats that we've helped with the fund. And through our fundraising. One, very early on, I would do fundraisers for personal reasons. Like if someone said, hey, my cat needs surgery. Mm-hmm. We can't do that anymore.
Yeah.
We have to focus our money and our efforts on homeless pets. And we have to also be very strict and tell people that, you know, if you're going to take on a pet, you need to be able to provide for your pet. And it's not that I don't want to help. I do, but it's just not fair. And it's, you know...
Yeah.
But we did early on help out a very special case. This cat had a kidney disease, and they had just developed the first kidney replacement surgery for cats.
Wow.
And they'd only done two ever, and I helped this lady raise, I think it was $15,000 to do a kidney replacement for a cat. And it was successful, and it was very heartwarming, you know, to know that we were able to do that. There was also a shelter that caught fire, Mid-Hudson Animal Aid in upstate New York, and they caught fire, and it was a huge disaster, and we were able to raise $10,000 in a day for them.
Wow,
yeah. Nice. And since then, I mean, to date, I think we're almost at $500,000 raised. So
that's amazing.
Yeah, all of our appearances, we basically, you know, it's evolved, and as I learn more about it and how to do it right, but all of our appearances are ticketed, and tickets range from $100 to $150 to meet Bub, and we make it special, and we do like a custom art print and all this stuff. And then all the proceeds get split between Bub's fund and the charity hosting us. So close to half of the money we've raised is just from appearances.
But it's amazing that such a little...
That's all right. I think she might need to pee now.
Okay. So now that we've all had our little nice little bathroom break, Bub started that little trend, but I think it'll help us all.
She
out.
Did have to pee.
Could have just edited that out, but let's make it known. We all had to go pee.
I like to just lay it all bare.
I disagree with that.
Do you have anything else for you, Ryan?
I mean, do you want me to read one of the questions?
You can. I didn't know if you had anything other that you had.
Yeah, I don't know. I might skip and just talk afterwards.
Okay. So, I mean, the only thing we really have left is we got a couple of community questions from some of the fans that are also Bub fans that had some questions that they've always kind of wondered. And so the first one is, and I think I can already answer this one, but is Bub as cuddly as she seems, or does she prefer her space?
She's definitely, she really likes to cuddle and get cozy, especially with people she likes. As you can tell, she's really into you. Like I said earlier, we've kind of had this sort of... we have our moments, but she's kind of been grumpy with me lately. But man, she loves my wife,
Stacy. Okay.
Oh, yeah. She's like all over her. But yeah, Bub's a very sweet cat and always has been.
She is a very sweet cat. I was actually really surprised by that. I didn't know... You know, I've never actually met Bub, so I didn't know how this was going to go.
Yeah.
She would work out with me, but I was really, I feel kind of prideful that she liked me
so
much.
Oh, you should, man.
So.
Pretty big deal.
Really,
I actually didn't like you before this. Now
but
I think
Bub
you're a great guy.
On, yeah. Okay.
Oh, he is a great guy. Huh?
All right. Hey, thanks, Bub. I guess our only other really community question is, and I think I already asked this one earlier, but how is Bub with her sibling kitties? Is she kind of a boss, or does she get picked on?
Well, it's funny because she thinks she's the boss, but she definitely gets picked on. And she acts like she's real tough, but she has no teeth and is very small. And it's pretty endearing.
Yeah. There's a lot of fight in that cat, though, huh?
Yeah, I wouldn't even call it fight. It's more like sass. and sass and then run. But it's been good for her because I think that's helped her mobility, sort of. She's had issues with mobility her whole life. And Spooky really, you know, it's like that basic instinct to fight or flee. And for her, fleeing is really good for her muscles and bones. So
keeps her fit and young.
Yeah.
I mean, that's really, we only have two community questions. It's not a community.
You guys have such a small community.
Yeah. Well, I mean, it's really the people that were like, yeah, I would like to know this about Bub. So.
Yeah, well, that's true. It's like, you know, it's pretty niche, you know.
Yeah.
People that follow your podcast and happen to be fans of Bub.
And said, that's my wife. My wife is like the biggest little Bub fan, and she thinks now our podcast is good.
It's cool. Oh,
now
so
she's
now
into it.
You guys are like, we now have to get Bub on this podcast, or else they're not going to let us do it anymore.
Yeah. I tell you, when I've told some people that we were interviewing Little Bub, I've met like five of the biggest Little Bub fans. They all were sure that they were the biggest Little Bub fan.
Oh, yeah. It's funny. I get that message all the time. I'm the biggest fan. It's well, technically, I'm the biggest fan.
Yeah, I would think so, but... What about you? Got anything else here, Ryan?
I mean, all right. So
he's got this.
So I want to go back to the game because this is like where my mind goes to. Is like this little Bub game. I'm like very interested in it. Arch enemy, because like you know every hero has like their arch enemy, like Mega Man, Dr. Wily, Bionic Commando, Hitler. Like,
well, that's
who would little Bub's arch enemy being?
Well, it's part of the stinger. It's a surprise.
It's okay. A surprise. Okay.
The whole thing is figured out. There's a big twist, mm-hmm. and then another one at the end.
Okay. It sounds like from what you talked about with Little Bob, in reality, it might be spooky.
Well, it could. I mean, that's.
It might be spooky.
That might be the obvious choice, and that might happen in a way, but no. There's definitely bigger twists than that.
I like that. I really like the idea that it's like a love letter to sort of the Mega Man genre, where because she's going to different places in the world, I've only played the first level, but I'm imagining there's going to be different locales and locations.
Absolutely. Oh, yeah. They're going to be pretty heavy-handed.
Okay.
That's, I mean,
not like, another version of the forest level, but with different colors, like straight up. And, Mario does that a lot, but we want to have like a underwater level. Mario just has like water levels? This will be way more specific. Like you're in this part of the world. You're in this part of the world. And I think what people might not realize is it alternates shooter and platformer.
Okay.
So the idea is that you get the battery to the space pod at the end mm-hmm. of the first platformer, and that powers her ship up, but she doesn't have any of the other pieces. So all the ship can pretty much do is get her from point A to point B. So when, like, let's say you're going to the Amazon jungle to retrieve the atmospheric thruster or mm-hmm. whatever, you have to fly there. So it's a shooter level through the sky.
Okay.
But so it'll be on Earth, and there'll be different. And each shooter level will be unique, and then each platformer level will be unique.
That sounds like a hell of an endeavor.
It is, so, yeah, mm-hmm. For sure.
So for that, I would like to give a special call out to your designer, who is Drew Wise, correct?
Yeah.
He's taken control of all of the pixel work.
Yeah, I mean, he's the artist. Although I come up with the ideas, he's the guy. He's the guy that came up with the look and every single part of the level he's designed and drawn and animated, and I truly believe he's a pixel wizard.
I would agree.
It
is very, very true, and it hits that nostalgia switch when you're playing.
It does, sure. And there's also like sort of a notch up. I feel like the graphics are like, and the style is very sharp, sort of mm-hmm. with, but still staying true to the the pixel. Like Mega Man to me is that way too. Like has like a very slick sort of look to it, and a very, I don't know, and that's what I like about it. I appreciate all the subtle animations where she walks and her eyes look left mm-hmm. and then right.
Yeah.
And there's more coming up. Like when you get too close to a ledge, she's going to get up on her paws. Like it's going to be pretty, pretty well thought out as far as like, and if you stand in one place long enough, she'll curl idle up animations, and take a nap.
Nice. Very much like Sonic.
I don't even remember.
Well, if you stand around too long, he like starts tapping his foot and he starts looking at you like, sassy. What are you doing?
Yeah,
he gets a little sassy too, which I guess Bubba's very sassy.
She is sassy, yeah.
So from this point, I think we really need to just tell people to go support the Kickstarter if you're at all interested in old school retro games, if you're interested in Little Bub, mm-hmm. And the Kickstarter is located at
littlebub.com/game.
Mm-hmm. And if you would like to look right here, our audio and video engineers will put that link right here above Bub. And you can click it right here and go.
Now you guys
that.
Have to do it.
They have to do it. That's what we do.
Well, no, we just say they have to do it and then it doesn't happen.
It'll happen. We'll put it right here and we'll link to it. And it is the Kickstarter. I think last I checked, you're about halfway through.
Mm-hmm. A little past. We're at 52,500 out of 100,000. Mm-hmm. One thing I want to point out is all the stuff we talked about will never happen unless you guys support this Kickstarter.
Yeah, you really got to.
And this isn't one of those like, they're still going to do it. We're not going to do it unless this gets funded. I think one of the challenges we're having to some people, 100,000 is a lot for a mobile game. It's not, I mean, it could live anywhere, realistically. The idea is that we want it to be free for everyone and mm-hmm. ad-free mm-hmm. and the best place to, and accessible to everyone, and the best place to do that is mobile. If we reach our stretch goals, we're going to have it, and ideally I'd love to see it. We're going to have gamepad control for your phone.
There you go.
That'd be great.
So, there you go. So fund this.
I will support. Also say, as you're speaking, like, that's a lot of money for a mobile game. It is, we saw in the demo, only one level out of eight, and possibly more past that because you have like the final bosses. If you're going like the Mega Man route, it's a very deep mobile experience. Like, there's a lot of functionality and a lot of variation. It's not just like your Endless Runner that just loops the same content over and over
and over. Yeah, it's meant to be like a game that you would actually pay for in the App Store, like $5 to $10, but we want to make it free. And the other thing to consider, people don't realize, is for our Kickstarter in particular, is, like I said, our rewards are really high end, which means they're very expensive to manufacture and ship. So 25% of all the money goes towards making and shipping stuff out, you know? So,
I do, you know, in my entire life, I've only supported two Kickstarters, technically three, because I do support the Little Bub Kickstarter too. Because I do believe in it. I mean, you can tell there's a care and a quality involved in the creation of this game. Like Ryan was saying, with the fact that, like, there's a lot of depth even to this first level, and the fact that it's all of this is going into right now primarily a mobile game is pretty mind-blowing. That's there's a lot of care involved. So
it does feel like a full-fledged PC or like a Wii U, like you said. Like, I played that game and, like, immediately I was like, oh, this is like Shovel Knight. Like,
very much
there's depth here.
Well, yeah, and that's a big. The Shovel Knight was a big influence for our Kickstarter. Drew is a huge Shovel Knight fan.
Oh, it's
a Shovel Knight is a mobile game. It's a it's a real game, and it's basically. And people don't realize just because we're making it for mobile doesn't make the game any less. The game it still takes the same amount of work as it does to make a PC game, except that it's going to be on a mobile device. I do get the idea. One thing I want to add is you can edit this in earlier or you can just cut it off. But between us, you know that pad?
Yeah.
It's cute, it's clever, but it's like, especially on a small screen, you're like, ugh.
I wasn't saying the big screen. Like, I played on a iPad. Big tablet and it was like a little hard
hard?
Go left to right because my thumb is like doing really big motions.
Well, a couple things we're doing is we're going to add an option to be able to move the pad wherever you want.
Okay.
To shrink it.
That'd be perfect. Yep.
Also, to have no pad and you just use your finger to move the spaceship.
Very nice.
Around.
Okay. I like that a lot.
Yeah. So I think that is going to really make the game more fun to play.
Yeah. And it just accommodates a lot of play styles too. Like, that makes the game even more for everyone.
Right. Yeah. That's what we're trying to do.
And at this point, if you are interested, the first level is completely. Totally fucking free. You can play this right now and know what we're talking about. And
if you want to play it, it's at littlebub.com/demo.
Yeah, and you can
made it so easy.
I mean, I found it in my Android App Store.
I did the
I
Google Play Store. Yeah,
yeah. I mean, it was super easy to download. Boom, right there we are. Littlebub, Hello Earth. So fucking easy.
Yeah, so. I bet you if you just Google or just search Littlebub in the App Store,
I just figured out her archenemy. It's your kid.
That'd be right? Good, but no, Roscoe the raccoon. The raccoon's already named after my kid. But that
is
would
it
be,
really?
Yeah.
Oh, okay, I didn't know.
Okay.
That.
Oh, there's a lot of like for Bub, like super Bub fans. There's a ton of like inside
a little Easter eggs.
Nice.
Yeah, or you just like well the yogurt. Obviously, if you really know Bub, that's her favorite food.
Yeah.
There's a lot of stuff. Another thing, again, you can edit it in later if you want, or we could just be talking about. But
we're just talking, bro.
If you saw the. I don't know if you saw the stretch goal, but we want to do a time sync. So
yeah,
I don't know
with
if you noticed.
The level. Yeah.
Yeah. So when you play it now, you see it goes from night to day as you play the platformer.
Yeah.
Well, the idea is that it'll actually sync to your clock and go from night to day depending on when you're playing. So if you play at night, it's going to be nighttime, but we're going to have time linked Easter eggs. So like you play, and what you were saying, so like if you play like even the first level and you find the secret spot, there's a little sign and you read the sign that says, come back here at 1:30 a.m. And if you literally come back at 1:30 a.m., like a hot air balloon will come down. You can jump in it and play like a bonus level.
Okay.
So stuff like that where it's completely time dependent. And you have to like write down, and you probably have like a notebook, like if you go to the pause menu to write down where and
so
when
like
you should go.
Really old school shit. Because I remember as a kid, before we had the internet, that's how you keep track of things. And I had a notebook. My buddy had a Pringles can full of just passwords and things that he'd saved and just.
Oh, that
in
seems
there.
Super inefficient. Why would you put in a Pringles can?
Yeah, to get all
that
greasy
wasn't me.
And covered in like cheese dust.
That's the worst idea.
Him. That wasn't me, but I just remember him pulling the Pringles can
need
out.
To name
but don't they don't have that in games anymore where you can like take notes?
Not a lot of them.
Not really. I mean, the internet is kind of. Ruined games to a degree. I mean,
well, most games don't even have manuals anymore. Now it's just you buy the box and it's just a disc. That's it. Oh, so you can't like even write notes manual, in.
Yeah. Which is why we have this big argument. I think everything will be digital within a decade.
No, it is. That's fine. I just hate that.
Yeah.
But well, that's you know, vinyl's like...
Made it's had a resurgence, yes. And I know that there is an NES-style stretch goal for Little Bub, but that's not an actual copy of the game, right?
It's no. The
cartridge?
Tier?
The cartridge.
It just... They're blank cartridges that
okay.
we got.
Okay.
And they, it's just, yeah, it's just.
For show.
Yeah, it's just cool.
It's like a little trophy.
Oh, dude, I mean, yeah. for it to be able to play in a Nintendo would be insane.
Top notch.
Your graphics $100 are a little too nice for
they're
Nintendo.
A little above Nintendo. Yeah.
It's a little too nice for Nintendo.
Would it SNES work? No.
Yeah, they're very SNES for a minute. They're almost 16-bit, so. Mm-hmm. But yeah,
that's a matter of color or what, or just resolution.
Yeah, it's the eight. So 8 bits means 8 colors on the screen. You guys are using a lot more colors, so yeah, it's probably 16 bits, maybe even 32.
It might be 30. I think it's. I don't know. I don't know enough, but it's definitely it's retro style in the modern age. So,
did you hear that, Bub?
You're a killer,
Bub. You look awesome right now, but you're not even looking at a camera.
So yeah. So again, the Kickstarter. You can play the demo. Is there, if you want to plug the team for the Kickstarter or for your team of the development team?
Like talk about those dudes?
Well, just, give them a name shout out.
Oh, yeah.
What's up, Drew? Twitters or anything.
Dude.
Matt. Like that?
Yeah, sure.
That's cool.
Just like that.
Did
yeah.
I forget anyone? No, that's
there's
the whole
Drew,
team.
There's Matt. There's the
oh, my God, of course,
Zealand.
Florian.
Yeah.
He's the whiz, man.
Yeah.
So another stretch goal is going to be a like Mario Maker.
Really?
For the game.
So like customizable
level
levels.
Yeah, okay. Well, not to spoil anything, but Florian created his own proprietary like game building platform that, and he has a lot of like people that are super into this thing, and it's basically like a drag and drop. He designs all the levels and
really?
He can do
okay.
it quick. So the idea is that if we get far enough, it'll be like available for people to build their own pub levels.
Super
could get
impressive.
Super cool. Yeah,
it could be super fucking crazy.
Oh, I just had a great idea for the game.
Yeah,
yeah.
We're
gonna do a water park level.
Damn,
like water slides and shit.
Yeah,
that's gonna be awesome.
Brilliant.
Well, Mike, Bub, you guys, we really want to thank you guys for coming on to our show and gracing us with your presence. We're really gonna push this. We hope the Kickstarter really takes off and things. We would really like to see this funded. I know me personally. I can't speak for Ryan. But,
oh, yeah. Yeah.
There is
I'm
a love
I'm much more
here.
Impressed with this than some of the other demos and things I've played.
Yeah.
Well, thanks. So, that really means a lot.
Mm-hmm. You've done well, and I hope that it happens. I would be very ecstatic.
It'll happen.
Yeah, I mean, Bub has that magic. So.
Mm-hmm.
And at the very least, we can count on your video and audio guys to back the project at least $2,000 each. Right?
Yeah, totally. They're in.
Hartman loves video games.
Yeah.
So much.
He loves video games and spending money.
That's perfect.
Those things about him.
Dude, you're like the core demographic.
So, again, thank you guys. Again, the Kickstarter is Little Bub, Hello Earth. Check that out. It is absolutely worth your time. If you are unsure at all, there is a totally free demo you can play. As always, you can find us at
Facebook.com/experiencegrind. You can find us at Twitter.com/expgrindpodcast and our website, www.experiencegrind.com, where we keep all of our episodes. If you have any questions, comments, concerns, death threats, whatever, experiencegrindpodcast@gmail.com. Mail us there. And we put up all of our video stuff on twitch.tv/experiencegrind, and you can find us on YouTube.
Mm-hmm.
We do not have a name yet for our channel because we do not have enough subscribers. So
when we get there,
just search for Experience Grind. We will be there.
I'm sure if you search for Experience Grind and Little Bub, this is going to come up. So, I mean, Little Bub is huge.
Yes.
Well, she's actually very small.
No, yeah.
She's
you
very
search for Little Bub. We're going to be like 300.
50, yeah. Okay. 300.
We're
going to
be in
more
the
like
300.
I was giving some benefit. But
we'll have to go to page 8 of the videos. We'll be
thank
there.
Thank you, Bub. Thank you, Mike, as always.
Yes.
This has been great. And we look forward to having you back to talk about this Krondor game.
Dude.
It's going to happen.
I'll do it. Yeah.
I'm telling you.
What we should do is make a pact where we start playing on X date.
And just do it.
Sort of, and then we all get together. It's like book club, but for for old obscure PC games from
Excellent.
The 90s.
All right.
I'm down.
I'm down. Cool. Thank you guys as always. You guys are the best fans in the world. I will not tell you the usual tagline. Grind out.